two readings to begin this morning with. The first comes from the book of Genesis. It's a story that we don't visit much. There's a particular element in it that I wanted to address in terms of some other pieces we'll be talking about today. So here now these words from Genesis chapter 21, verses 8 through 21. The child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on that day, the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac." The matter was very distressing to Abraham on account of the son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for it is through Isaac that offspring shall be named for you. As for the son of the slave woman, I will make a nation of him also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite of him, a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Do not let me look upon the death of this child." And as she sat opposite of him, she lifted up her voice and wept, and God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with the water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness, and he became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. And he had blessing and understanding to these words, and you'll see the part of that that I am talking about as we get into the rest of the message a little bit later. I do want to share, though, a quote from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King with you from an essay he once wrote called "Nonviolence, the Only Road to Freedom." And in it, he says this: "I must continue by faith, or it is too great a burden to bear." Read that again. "I must continue by faith, or it is too great a burden to bear." And violence, even self-defense, creates more problems than it solves. Only a refusal to hate or kill can put an end to the chain of violence in the world and lead us towards a community where men and women can live together without fear. Our goal is to create a beloved community. And this will require a qualitative change in our souls as well as a quantitative change in our lives.
This is a song called "More." Thank you. My message this morning is entitled Managing Life's Wildernesses. So tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the U.S. It's the only federal holiday that's been given to a minister, and it happens to be for a person of whom I'm a very big fan. So it might not come as a surprise that tomorrow is a pretty important day to me. And I should also go ahead and just mention that the offices will be closed at the church tomorrow for the holiday. Dr. King, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was a voice. He was a voice that was crying out in the deserts and the wildernesses of racism and classism. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a desert state, sweltering in the heat of injustice and oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. Dr. King knew what the difficulties of life's deserts, life's wildernesses, looked like. He had lived them. He had worked to help others through them. And he fought to put an end to the racism and classism that needlessly forced folks to endure them. And while his efforts and the efforts of others has brought some justice, has eliminated some of the needless wildernesses of life, the wildernesses, nonetheless, still persist. In his novel 1984, George Orwell paints a picture of a dystopian wilderness. He imagines what the world would be like under the control of authoritarian regimes. Frankly, it's something Americans need to be thinking about during an election year. In his world, Big Brother controlled everything. Where people live, what they do, where they work, what they say, even how they think. A thought crime was to think thoughts that are against the ideology of the party. And it's a horrible crime in that story. The central character in Orwell's book is a man whose name is Winston. And he works at the Ministry of Truth, where he rewrites history, so that it fits with Big Brother's view of the world. Nowadays, the powers that be not only rewrite history, but they also make sure that it's not being taught in schools. Winston begins rebelling against Big Brother in sort of small but deliberate acts of defiance. And he finds this little alcove in his house where the cameras of Big Brother can't see him, and he begins this affair with a woman named Julia. And in his own thoughts, he questions the way that the world is. And as each of his small acts of rebellion occur, the likelihood that Winston will get caught increases, and then the tension rises until the fateful moment when Winston's resistance is exposed and he is sent to prison to be rehabilitated. Which meant basically breaking him emotionally and breaking him physically, and then turning him into a party drone. His interrogator, though, is a man named O'Brien. And he wants to convince Winston that resistance is futile, that the party will never be defeated, that the present will stretch into the future. And at one point, O'Brien chillingly says to Winston, "You want a picture of the future? Imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever." It's an overwhelming image, a lifetime, a threat of a lifetime of living in that desert wilderness. To today's scripture has a setting that is its day and age's version of the dystopian future painted in Orwell's book, as well as in a lot of the popular literature of today. In biblical times, in
biblical times, the hopelessness that we point to in our modern stories of dystopian futures. In biblical times, they are captured in wildernesses or desert stories. They are places that are sort of vast and confusing, and often they're full of death, or at least the threat of death. And in the Old Testament, the Israelites went through the wilderness on a journey from slavery in Egypt to freedom in the Promised Land. They wander in the wilderness, even lose their religion, and the threat of death is very real for them until God intervenes. And like Hagar and in our scripture today, they were ultimately transformed. And we see this theme throughout books of the prophets, and then we even see the theme as Jesus goes into the wilderness for 40 days. Even in early Christianity, the tradition and practice of pilgrimage formed important aspects of discipleship and were understood to be moving out into a wilderness. But as our story today from the Bible reminds us, wildernesses are difficult and scary places. They are full of threats, including the threat of death itself. But biblically, at least in the way those stories I just named are told, they are never the end. Biblically, they are sources of revelation. And yes, they are mostly, if not entirely, difficult revelations. But they're important. Some of the greatest movements of the Spirit and changes in lives of biblical characters comes through the wilderness, representative of difficult times. So, an intriguing question for me is, what survival skills, what tools do we need to survive these difficult and trying places? Well, it occurs to me that in this increasingly divided nation, with firearm deaths on the rise, with a disappearing middle class, in a land where 1 in 7 people face hunger in the course of a year, with the continued racism and classism Dr. King addressed still alive and well, with so many things that can make this nation feel like a wilderness, like a desert, survival skills for the wilderness seem to me to be very worthwhile, and not to mention a timely investigation. So I'm going to start with a true story. In 1979, and some may remember this story, in 1979, the tugboat Cahaba was headed down the Tombigbee River in Alabama. The current was really flowing fast, and the tug's pilot approached the one large bridge there, and he released his coal barges to go. Then he put his 1,800 horsepower twin engines into reverse to get away from the current pulling him into that bridge. But when the boat moved just slightly off the line, the current swung the boat sideways, and it ran and slammed it directly into the bridge. The current was so strong that it forced the boat down underwater. And to the astonishment of everyone there, it passed under the bridge, popped up upright with the engine still going and the pilot at the wheel on the other side. Well, why did it come back to the surface in an upright position? Well, because it was ballasted with a 3-foot thick lining of cement on the bottom of the hull. It is a vivid reminder that life can go horribly wrong, but if we have the right ballast, we can get through it and emerge upright on the other side. One of the clear messages in the way the wilderness stories of the Bible are told, and certainly in Hagar's story from today, is that the folks in the wilderness never give up on God, and God never gives up on them. They're ballasted by their faith. Now, that may seem a bit simplistic, even a little
overly sentimental, unless you've been in the dark depths of the murky waters, unless you have struggled with the depression and isolation that our human instinct tends to run to when you think you're lost and alone, hopeless. I'm not saying that spirituality will solve your problems. I'm just saying that it can lighten the load a bit, ballast you some. I'm not saying that the wilderness, the tough times, will magically disappear. I'm just saying it has a tendency to help you see a little more light in the darkness. Like the tugboat Kahala. If we hope to survive the difficult places and spaces that life always brings to us, it is helpful to be well ballasted, to have some form of hope to hold on to. As our Bible story for today is told, even in the wilderness, even as she was certain of death of her child, her one and only son, Hagar turns to God, and God hears her, and more precisely, God hears the voice of the boy Ishmael, which is actually the meaning of that name, God heard. So even in the wilderness, their faith ballasts them. And that brings me to the second true story that I'd like to share. Former U.S. President Richard Nixon is infamous for his place at the center of the Watergate scandal. He disgraced both the office of the president and the United States itself, at least in the eyes of the world. And when Hubert Humphrey, one of the former vice presidents, died, Nixon actually attended his funeral. And dignitaries came from all over the country, even all over the world. And not surprisingly, Nixon was made to feel decidedly unwelcomed. People turned their eyes away, and conversations ran dry anytime he came around. Nixon could literally almost feel the ostracism being heaped upon him. Then Jimmy Carter, the currently serving president at the time, walked into the room. Carter was from a different political party than Nixon and was well known for his honesty and integrity. And as he moved to get to his seat, President Carter noticed Nixon standing alone. Carter immediately changed his course, walked over to Nixon, held out his hand, smiled genuinely and broadly, embraced Nixon, and said, "Welcome home, Mr. President. Welcome home." The incident was reported by Newsweek magazine, who wrote, "If there was a turning point in Nixon's long ordeal in the wilderness, it was that moment and that gesture of love and compassion." Carter gifted Nixon with love and compassion. Nixon certainly had done nothing to deserve it. It was an act of pure grace on Carter's part. I think that may be the second part of what helps us through the tough times. Each other. More precisely, shared love and compassion between each other. Not because we feel like someone earned it or deserves it, but because we all need it. Because we are all called to it. Because when properly shared, it puts at least some into our wilderness, or at the very least makes them easier to navigate. The question we must ask ourselves is, do we play the role of followers of the teachings of Jesus when we see folks in the wilderness? When we see Nixon standing over there at the corner, do we do the unexpected, the somewhat illogical, and the altogether Christ-like thing and embrace them, saying, "Welcome home." I'm definitely not saying that our nation has become one big wilderness experience, not at all. At times our nation actually seems like the biggest playground in the world. But we do go through tough times, some of them created by the very representatives that we elected. And because of it, I would argue that it is important that we are well ballasted. It is important that we realize we are not alone. It is not just that you have whatever your understanding of God is. It's not just that you have that. It's that you also have a spiritual community. These people right here, and all of those that love and care for you. The importance of a spiritual community and a love and a compassion we receive from them to help us through those times was a reality that was not lost on Dr. King either. When he traveled, he almost always traveled with part of his community with him. As a matter of fact, just minutes before he was shot down outside of that hotel room in Memphis. He was inside that hotel room in Memphis, actively engaged with his spiritual community, having a pillow fight. True story. Yes, community matters, particularly in the deserts, the wildernesses, the tough times. Dr. King's own community would then lean on each other during the days and months that followed after King was shot. For all of us, life is full of wildernesses. The death of family and friends, the loss of a job, health issues, major life changes. I could go on and on. The most important ballast for all of us in those wildernesses is each other. The most important ballast is each other. More specifically, the way that we share and represent love and compassion to each other. Even when we may not feel like the other person deserves it, because it isn't about deserving it. It is about needing it. And we all need it. We all need it.
You can hold mine when you need to let go. I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home.
Persevere during difficult times. When we find ourselves in modern day wildernesses, we confess that we are much more likely to go at it alone, to isolate ourselves, shut support communities out, than we are to take a risk, open ourselves up, and trust in the hope found in the love and compassion of others. When we find ourselves in our darkest places, may we remember our need to be well balanced. May we be encouraged to turn outward to receive the loving spirit of the ones who surround and care about us. And in good times and bad, may we seek out the lost, the confused, and the afraid. May we walk boldly into the wildernesses of this life,
where others struggle, and extend to them the love and compassion Jesus encouraged us to share. Amen. We see this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness in your life. And may your words and your actions share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
This is "Oh Happy Day" from hymn to 17th, I want to say it is. I'm not sure exactly what.
I wouldn't even know.
"Oh Happy Day." It was from the movie Sister Act, and it was also an old hymn in 1967 that came out by, I can't remember the name of the hymn. It was a hit in 1967.